I'm Chaz Post, and I'm a friend of the rent.
So my wife was like, Billy, I can tell you 37 reasons right now why you should not say that in front of other women.
Are we recording?
Oh, hey, you got to start telling me this, Gordon.
Sorry.
Hey, everybody out there listening, welcome to another episode of the Friend of the Rant podcast. I am co-host Billy Liggett, and I am joined, as always, by my dear friend and partner, Gordon Anderson.
Good evening.
And happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We are recording this on the Monday before Thanksgiving, and I asked Gordon beforehand if this could just be the Thanksgiving episode because I have so much I want to say about my favorite holiday, but he said no because we have actually an important guest on this week. So, Gordon, I'm going to let you introduce this week's Friend of the Rant or this month's Friend of the Rant.
But before we do that, if you have something to say about your favorite holiday, I encourage you to lay
it on us. So much about it. It's just so much about it. I love the
yams.
No, I was going to, like, the family and all the important... No, I do love the yams. So my wife... Gordon, actually, do you remember this? Do you remember way back when? I've lived in Sanford for going on 13 years now, but maybe 11 years ago, we invited you and Jonathan and maybe Brooke or somebody else from the Herald over to our house for Thanksgiving.
I remember everything.
Okay, well, do you remember this? So my wife still is kind of mad about that. I don't think we've ever told you why.
Oh, God.
So we invited you guys over, and we cooked this huge meal. And I guess you guys had other things to do that day. So you guys come over, you ate for about 30 minutes, and then you're like, we're out. You left. And we're just kind of like, okay, okay. I guess that went well. And
that was what, 2007?
That was a long time ago, yeah.
I had a lot going on in 2007.
Okay. Well, I don't think I've ever told you that. So, but yeah, I don't want to talk about Thanksgiving anymore because this is a...
Well, you and I are no longer going to discuss it. I'm going to send Jennifer a message on Facebook and we'll get to the bottom of it and hopefully she'll forgive me.
Yeah, hopefully. Doubtful.
Anyway, our guest this month is Chaz Post, who is, as stated at the beginning of this episode, a friend of the rant. His law firm advertises in the rant, but Chaz is not only an outstanding attorney here in Sanford. He's also a member of the Sanford City Council. Welcome, Chaz.
Thank you. Very happy to be here. Quite frankly, I'm honored to be here.
All right, you can stop now.
Yeah, honored.
Well,
honored.
No, I am. I've watched the rant evolve for a long time, and I'm honored to be here. I appreciate the invite.
Well, that is amazing to hear. When you say evolve, tell us from your perspective what that means, what we evolved from, what we have evolved to.
And no, I wasn't going to do this month, Gordon. I was not going to have our guest.
No, I don't want
talk
him to
about
praise
how great
us.
We are.
This is probably an opportunity for him because the third part of my question was, please explain to us any missteps we've made along the way.
Yeah, as a regular advertiser, you have authority to tell us what we're doing wrong.
No, I don't think you're doing anything wrong. I think you're doing everything right.
Oh, listen to that. Listen to that. It's on the record.
Unfortunately, we're not going to say the same things about him today. So
that's right. We have a lengthy list of your misdeeds. No,
we have an elected official on the show, Gordon.
We do.
Yeah, back when we had a radio show, we started it as kind of a gag or whatever. But then we started having important people on our show and asking important questions and getting important answers. And we thought, wow, this is what this is supposed to be for. So I really hope we get down to the brass tacks of what is right and what is wrong in Sanford, North Carolina today, and that at the end of this podcast, we have all the answers.
That's why we invited Chaz.
Yeah.
What do you think about that, Chaz? Do you have all the answers?
I do not have all the answers. Quite frankly, I don't have very many answers.
So, let's start from the very beginning, Chaz. You're from Sanford, right?
Yes, born and raised.
All right. you know, some people want to get the hell out of whatever their hometown is. Some people want to, you know, stick around. Some people want to stick around and make it better. It looks like you chose the latter there. What made you want to get into local politics in the town that you were born and raised in?
Well, I went to college down in Wilmington and then moved to Charlotte to go to law school. Worked there for about 2 years. And while I was working there, I paid a lot of attention to what was going on in Sanford. And there wasn't a whole lot really going on here. And then my father and his law partner made me an offer to come home and work at the law office. And I came back and I saw kind of who was quote unquote running things and how the Sanford economy was. And I decided that I wanted to make a difference so that folks that were like me, that were born and raised here, would want to come back home and live here after they go off to college or trade school or go work somewhere else. And I also wanted to make it a place where people that weren't from here would be attracted to, you know, quality of life, all those good things, amenities.
About what year was this?
That was 2011, the summer of 2011. Got okay. married and moved back to Sanford.
2011, that's, Gordon, you and I were still at the newspaper then, correct?
Or I was not.
Had I chunked your ass by then?
you had unceremoniously given me the boot in February of 2010. Well, you were still at the Herald, although we were still in touch.
Yeah, well, anyways, I bring this up because 2011 is, doesn't seem like that long ago, but when you look at just where Sanford is now compared to 2011, a lot has changed. But when you came back to 2011, when you were back in 2011, you said you kind of wanted to make this a place where people wanted to stay and people from the outside. So what, looking back now, what in 2011, where was Sanford and what did you feel like needed to happen?
Well, there were some folks in control around here that weren't bringing any progress. And I know that everybody likes progress, but nobody likes change. But I think that the change that has happened since really, you know, 2013, 2014 has been positive for Sanford and Lee County. Our mayor's probably one of the best mayors that we've ever had here in town. He set an agenda. City Council bought into the agenda, and things have really started to pick up. Industry is booming and moving into town. People are moving into town. And it's just becoming a place where I think people want to live and be and work and play. And before that, I just don't believe that that particular element was here. I don't think people wanted to live here. I don't think, when I say people, I mean like younger folks moving back into town or younger folks being attracted into town. That weren't originally from here. And I think that the development of downtown and really just job growth and the prosperity that we're seeing has really brought a lot of people either home or to move here in general.
So I'm sorry, Gordon. I'm going to throw some hard balls at you here.
Uh-oh.
Now, so I agree. Sanford has changed a lot. And but how much of that is just the way it would have been or is, you know, the economy or, you know, driven by that, and how much of it has to do with the people who are elected to vote on city, you know, like bond elections and things like that. Like, what do you feel like the elected officials of Sanford have done specifically to move things forward? Because I think most of us will agree Sanford is in much better place than it was, you know, 8-9 years ago. But how much of that is driven by what you do as elected officials?
Well, I think one of the most least talked about positives that Sanford has going for it is our public-private partnership in the Sanford Area Growth Alliance. I think that that particular organization that, you know, recruits jobs, keeps jobs here. You know, that back in 2011, 2012, there were some people that disbanded the Economic Development Corporation at some point. We didn't have one.
Yeah.
It was written in an email that they was going to disband it and run over somebody with a tank. So, you know, now we have revamped the Sanford Area Growth Alliance. We have some leaders in Michael Smith and Bob Joyce that are just tremendous and have just done a really good job recruiting and keeping business here. Jimmy Randolph as well. And I think that local leaders, local business people, and the citizens of Sanford have bought into that, and they see the positive impact that that has had on jobs and economic development here in town that didn't have that back in 2011, 2012. So I think that's one of the things that gets talked about the least. And it was the local government that disbanded a certain local government official at the time that did his best to disband the Economic Development Corporation. And what we've done is...
You're going to have to say his name eventually.
Jim Womack.
Hi, Jim.
The local government tried to get that back together, and here we are. I mean, there's more stuff coming. I'm not allowed to talk about it, but there is more stuff coming. And the people
you're allowed to talk about it here.
No, I'm not.
No, in this room,
nobody listens to this.
All permissions are granted.
Gordon, here's what happens: we record this. Gordon and I meet, we listen to it, and then we just delete everything and go on about our. No, I'm kidding.
And I don't mean to rant, so if I start ranting, just tell me to be quiet.
Product placement.
That's right. That's right. Chaz, one of the things that always strikes me, having run political campaigns, and I should disclose, I worked on Chaz's first campaign for office, and I'm putting that out there. I'm hopefully out of campaigns for the foreseeable future, so that I can focus on the rant. But I just wanted to put that out there so people know that, yes, I worked on Chaz's campaign.
You guys go way back.
Yeah. How difficult is it to make the average person understand the importance of economic development, what Saga does? Because when you write about those things and you talk about those things, it's like you can kind of get into the weeds and you get out of what a lot of people consider real life. But it's also really important. So how do you, as a city councilman, how do you, as a member of the city council, as an elected official, how do you express that importance to people?
I'm a lawyer, so I'm not the greatest at explaining, you know, economic development. I'm not an economic developer. I don't claim to know the ins and outs of how it works. But I will tell you, you know, incentives have played a huge role in the economic boom that we've seen here in Sanford and Lee County. And, it, you know, it's a game that has not always been played because people speak, you know, negatively of it, but everybody else is doing it, so we have to do it. And I try my best to explain it that way, because when you're competing with some other state or some other locale, municipality that's offering, you know, all these tax breaks and land and all this other stuff, we have to do that to play the game. If we want business to be here, we have to get in there and negotiate and make offers and counter offers and compete with these other places around the country and, quite frankly, around the globe. And explaining that to your average citizen is not always the easiest thing to do, because a lot of people want to call it corporate welfare, and it's not that. And
incentives were all we wrote about at the Herald, Gordon,
in the mid-2000s.
And I haven't been paying much attention the last 7 years, but are people still debating this? I mean,
oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
All right.
Well, and I think that it's not honestly debated very often, or very often it is not honestly debated. And Chaz, you can probably speak to this. The range of things that government has available to it in terms of incentives is enormous. You know, our incentive policy is largely about, hey, if you come here and bring $10 worth of tax base, we'll give you $2 of that back. So you're giving back something that you didn't have to begin with.
You're investing. I call it an investment. It's an investment in your community.
Now, there are cases, and the Barat Forge deal, there was land purchased, and that was a little, that was probably a more aggressive incentive than I've seen in Lee County.
That, I mean, that came down to the wire. I mean, the governor was giving a press conference, and Kentucky was, you know, Mitch McConnell was on the phone trying to lure them to Kentucky. I mean, these things are competitive. If there was a stronger word than competitive, I would use it. It's extremely competitive. I think the folks from Barat Forge and Kalyani Group were really impressed with the presentation that our Sanford Area Growth Alliance officials made. And I mean, we rolled out the red carpet for them, and they deserve it. I mean, they're bringing 460 plus jobs and 170 plus million in investment. And it's just, it's huge. It's a huge deal. And I'm just excited for it.
We made a big deal out of that, and rightfully so, because, like you say, it is huge. Huge is a good word for it. But explain to the layman, which I proudly have that title. You said 460 jobs. Explain what 460 jobs does to a local economy. Say maybe half of those people end up living in Sanford, or say more than half of them live in Sanford. And you're talking about pretty good high-paying jobs. What does 460 jobs do to a community like ours?
So if you've got, I would say, 230 people living in town, that's 230 people purchasing homes, hopefully.
$150,000, $200,000 homes.
Or more, yes, sir.
Sir. What the hell?
Yeah. What in the world?
Where'd that come from? Chaz has enrolled in the journalism program.
It's a doctor, by the way.
Squire.
But, you know, that's 230 homes. That's property taxes. That's restaurants. That's shopping. And that's 230 people plus their spouses and potentially children, being here and living here. Now, that presents its challenges as well. You got to up your police. You got to up your fire. You got to up your city services. So
schools.
So, you know, we're going to have some growing pains. I don't want the people of Sanford to think this is some sort of, fantasy land. I mean, there are going to be growing pains, but we're working through those. We have a plan, and I hope that everybody understands that and is buying into it.
It's better to take on the challenge of 400 more people than it is to say, what are we going to do losing 400 jobs here? How are we going to fill this gap? So,
yeah.
Okay.
So what I was going to ask earlier, Billy, is from your perspective, you asked Chaz, he's born and raised here, mm-hmm. as is my wife, my beautiful wife,
Jordan,
who is in the room.
What you drinking over there?
Kool-Aid?
She's drinking the Kool-Aid.
What's that called? It's not a Yeti cup. Okay, all right.
But
I'm off on a tangent.
I contrast that with
good.
With me. I've lived in Sanford, not counting college, since 1996. Not originally from here, but
yeah,
I've spent enough. I've lived here longer than I lived anywhere else. And Billy, you moved here in 2007.
Is
that right?
Yeah.
So from your perspective, we were talking about this earlier. I'm taking the discussion back, but mm-hmm. you know, what has the change in Sanford been like since you came here in 2007? Around 2014-15, things started to sort of move, but I'm going to hand it over to you. Like, what do you think?
2007. I was hired by Bill Horner, now the publisher in Chatham County, and I've told you this story before, Gordon. When he brought me here for my interview, I flew in from Louisiana. He drove me around and he showed me Carolina Trace. He showed me Pinehurst, and he took me out to eat at Bonefish in Pinehurst. And he showed me, like I said, Trace, Bonefish, and a couple. And he showed me downtown, whatever. But I look back at that as he did his very best to avoid showing me Sanford to get me to come to Sanford. And I don't feel like 12 years later, if I'm bringing somebody in to hire them to come to Sanford, that that's what you do anymore. I think Sanford is all the things that we said 12 years ago that we wish we had. We wish we had more retail. We wish we had 12 years ago, remember the Walmart was still where the Food Lion is.
If only we could get a Jersey Mike's
back. Oh, I love Jersey Mike's. No, so I'm just saying Sanford has it's changed immensely in 12 years. I know a lot of places have changed. Everything changes, but I think Sanford is going in the right direction, but it's more than that. I think some of the decisions made for with children in mind, such as playgrounds and green space and trails, and you look at Sanford and it's still very green here, yet there's still growth here, and the retail is all great, and it keeps a lot of people here. But I think what's more important is the quality of life, and I think Sanford's going in the right direction there. So to answer your question, when we moved here 12 years ago, had Sanford not improved at all, we were taking our kids to Cary and Apex for playgrounds. We were going up there to go to Target and things like that. And you don't have to do that quite as much anymore because Sanford is starting to offer those things that people in the Triangle area moved to the Triangle area for. I think Sanford's going in the right direction. We like it here, like it a lot, and we have no desire to go anywhere else. We think the schools here are great. We think the growth is heading in the right direction, and I know we're going to talk about a few other things coming up that are exciting as well. So, yeah, it's all going in the right direction. Plus, I work at Campbell University now. It's still, you know, it's a nice little commute, but we're also doing the rant here, and we wouldn't be able to, what we're doing with the rant wouldn't happen had this growth in Sanford. If we tried to start this thing in the economy from 12 years ago, we'd have been fools. And so we're at a place right now where we can actually do something like this. So, yeah, I hope that answers your question.
One of the things you used to always mention, Billy, when you first came here, and this drove me up the wall, and it's hilarious. As I say this with our Jordan and I's two dogs laying on the ground in
dog
the room.
Dog parks.
You talked about dog parks. Don't we have a dog park now?
Why'd you give me a Wisconsin accent for that? I never said dog pack.
Did I say dog pack?
Kind of did.
Was that a Wisconsin accent? What the hell are you talking about?
Go back and review the tape.
Well, that's staying in. But anyways, yeah. don't we have a dog park now?
Yeah. It's yeah.
I wouldn't take these.
My dog Honey died the year it opened, but hey, you know, a little late, but
you still have Miles.
I still have Miles. He's not a big dog park dog.
Chaz, you also lost a dog.
Oh yeah, Chaz is on the show.
I would like to know when you're thinking about getting another dog.
Man, Dozer was my man.
Dozer was so sweet.
He actually passed away a year ago, 2 days ago.
Wow.
What kind of dog?
He was a Well, when we got him, he was 6 weeks old, and they told us that he was half English, half American bulldog. But he kind of looked like a boxer, but I don't think he was a boxer. His face wasn't smushed like a boxer. But I got that dude when I was 19 years old, summer after my freshman year of college, and he lived with me.
Until last year. So what's that, like 3.5 years?
So, needless to say, he's seen it all.
No, there was one time that there was an event where you live, and I showed up early to bring a cooler or some party infrastructure item, and I didn't know if I should go around the back, and I very gingerly opened the gate and walked around the corner of the house, and there you were, and you said, "Dozer, get him." And that dog ran at me like he was going to kill me. And I had had nothing but good experiences with Dozer, but I still went outside the gate just to make sure.
He got locked up a couple times. I had to bail him out.
That is a perfect segue, because I do want to talk to you about what you do on a day-to-day basis with law and with criminal law. And, you know, I don't want to ambush you like certain people did with attack mailers in 2013. But I think that a lot of people are probably curious about what it's like to be an attorney and a criminal defense attorney. I know that's not all you do, but what is the average day in the life of attorney Chaz Post like?
Look, I represent individuals targeted by the government for prosecution. People come to me in their lowest points in their life. They've either been charged with a crime, or they are being investigated for a crime and they need some help and some guidance. And that's what I try to provide them. I try to be there for them. I worry about it so they don't have to worry about it. I advocate for them, not in words, but also in spirit. Not just in words, but also in spirit. Day to day, man, I'm in court 9 to 12 and sometimes 2 to whenever. The judge, or whenever the DA's docket's closed and the judge is ready to go home. I travel. I go to Moore County, Harnett County, Chatham County, Wake County, Cumberland County. I'm pretty much a Central North Carolina criminal defense lawyer.
What is it about your job that the average person, I don't even want to say doesn't understand, but just may not expect? What's the thing that happens to you on a daily or semi-daily basis that people would just be blown away by?
I mean, I can't – this is going to sound kind of crazy, but I can't tell you how many nights I lay in the bed worrying about other people's problems and worrying about, you know, this guy over here that is looking at all this time in prison and tomorrow is the big day and what am I going to do to save his life? There's sleepless nights, man. I mean, I'm not going to lie and say there's not. And everybody has their own problems. So, you know, I got my own problems. You got your own problems. Billy has his. Everyone does. So,
well, I don't have any problems. But, so I'm asking, as someone who has seen a lot of movies about trials,
it is nothing like.
No, I know. But sometimes this is kind of a peel back the curtain thing. But are you the type of lawyer that says, you know, so did you do it? No, I mean, do you need to know 100% the truth, or do you move on trying to not ask that question?
Well, it just depends. I mean, if we're going to trial, I can't knowingly put some. I wouldn't, and I can't ethically. Put someone on the stand to say they didn't do something that they had have told me that they did.
So if they're, you're going to put them on the stand, you need to know.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Or I don't need to know. I mean, however you want to look at
it. Sure.
And if they tell me they didn't do it, then I can put them up there.
Sure.
Not necessarily going to. And a lot of times you don't put, you know, in criminal defense law, 9 times out of 10, your client's not going to testify. That's just kind of how it is. You have that Fifth Amendment right not to incriminate yourself. And I try to let them have that right unless they insist. Because it's not really about anything other than can the state or the government fully satisfy or entirely convince 12 members of Lee County or whatever county I'm in or a judge that the person is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's actually in the jury instructions, fully satisfy or entirely convince. That's a pretty high standard, wouldn't you say?
It's innocent until proven. So another peel back the curtain. I've been on two jury duties in the last 10 years, and I was picked for one jury, and I got passed over for another. But in both cases, I had to watch what amounted to about 8 hours of jury selection. Is that the most tedious process in the entire world? Is all the repeated questions you have to ask jurors, and then when it just took forever, and you have to do that all the time. I imagine it's probably the least favorite part of your job.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely tedious, but
important.
It's probably the most important part of the trial as well, because you have got to weed out people that are either going to, no matter what, convict your guy, or no matter what, you know, say not guilty. People that are biased, or basically people that can't be fair and impartial to everyone, including the judge, the defendant, myself, the prosecution. So you got to find those people that are going to be fair and impartial.
Can you tell when a potential juror is trying to cheat the system, like just answering terrible answers just to get out of it?
Absolutely.
And you pick them anyway.
No, I've never done that.
Just to piss him off.
Usually just look up at the judge and he's like, all right, you're excused.
So real quick, I got chosen for a kidnapping trial. And the first question he asked me is, what I do for a living? I said, sir, I'm a newspaper editor. And I was ready to just stand up and walk out there. And I don't know where the lawyer was. He's like, interesting. I got chosen for that damn trial.
Yeah, that happened to me. Chaz, have I ever told you about my jury experience?
No, I don't think so.
It was 2002. And I was still an intern at the Sanford Herald. This is long before you darkened Lee County's door, Billy.
I did ruin it.
But I was being paid hourly, which was the norm for the Sanford Herald, but I was being paid even less hourly than what the Sanford Herald typically paid back then. I don't know what they pay now.
Yeah.
But I went in with that attitude that I'm going to get out of this. I cover cops. I cover courts.
Yeah.
I'm going to get out of this. And the exact same thing happened. They were like, well, you're a journalist.
Yeah.
You should be able to be impartial.
You're a smart one.
And then I got seated. The jury was impaneled. When the arguments ended, we went into the deliberation room, and I was named foreman of the jury.
Oh, wow.
I was 22 years old. I didn't know what the hell I was talking about. We found the guy guilty, and that was it. And I remember coming out of it and learning later that one of the biggest factors of a trial is not that what we heard, but what we were not allowed to hear.
Yeah.
We were frequently sent back into the jury room while the attorneys argued over what was admissible and what wasn't.
Chad's about to listen to a couple knuckleheads talk about law, but don't you like it? Don't you like when the judge says, jury, forget what you just heard?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, I've seen that as a reporter. There was a procedural error that caused this witness to say what they said, and I was just fascinated by the fact that this is the way that trials work, and that's the way they should work.
Yeah.
You know, there's factors that should be weighed should be included, and factors that shouldn't be weighed shouldn't be included.
Nope. Yeah, nobody wants to be on a jury, but when you are there, it's fascinating. It's just absolutely fascinating.
Chaz, have you ever seen anybody, like, you see this on the internet, like, idiots saying, like, man, I'm just going to go up there and say, like, man, I can't do it. I'm a racist. Like, because I've heard about judges, like, being like, oh, you're a racist. I'm going to throw you in jail then. Like that's a contempt issue or whatever.
You know, that's a little overboard. But if a person is blatantly trying to get themselves out of the box, so to speak, the judge may even inquire himself or herself and try to pin that person down as to what in the world they're talking about. So I've seen that happen, especially in certain counties with certain judges.
One more lawyer question for you, because one of my best friends in high school, he's not my best friend.
I mean, how do you even rank that? Is he in your MySpace top eight?
One of my best friends from high school went to West Point. I don't know why I just said West Point. It doesn't matter. He was a JAG officer, and then got out of the military, came back, right? Shut up, Gordon. Came back to his hometown to become a lawyer, a defense attorney. And in his hometown, which is where you're at, which means a lot of his clients are the people he grew up with, went to high school with, graduated with. And I was talking with him a couple years ago about this, and he says, it's a little awkward sometimes. You run into that any as a defending people that you grew up with?
All the time. You know, people make mistakes, or, and I'm just there to try to help them. But yes, I have friends. I've tried cases for friends. I've gotten cases dismissed for friends. I've lost cases for friends. So
former friends.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, but I see, day in and day out, there's people that I know in the justice system.
Yeah.
And it's not just defendants. I mean, law enforcement officials, clerks, bailiffs, everyone that's involved in the justice system, I've at least, you know, known them or someone that they know from back in the day. So it's a
probably had a lot of jury members kicked off because they'll say, I went to school with Chaz over here. And so, yeah, all right, get out of here.
Yeah, well, that to say a little bit more than that. But, yeah, I mean, there's people have said that they were my friend and the government got them.
I dated moved. Chaz for 3 years and he broke up with me. And hell yeah, I'm going to vote against him. Sorry.
You can't say that. As the co-founder of The Rant.
That I dated Chaz for 3 years?
No, you can't say that. That's staying in the podcast. But you do bring up a point.
It was only 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Off and on.
I'm not going to get in the middle of this. I'm going to change the subject quickly. But no, that's something that I've noticed in working with you, Chaz. When I was a reporter for the Sanford Herald, I tended to pick up a lot of friction between the defense side and the prosecution side to include law enforcement. And the Chaz Post that I know and that I've known since 2013 is like every cop in town. I don't know about every cop in town, but they're all like, oh, man, I love Chaz. And no, I don't take it personal. And I wonder if you could talk about that for a second, just what it's like to have to cross-examine a law enforcement officer without attacking them and their integrity.
That's a really, really good question. And I am very good friends with tons of law enforcement officers in town, either from a long time ago and up until now, or just through my interactions with them since becoming a lawyer here in town. But it's a fine line. I mean, I'm just the guys and gals that, you know, are reasonable know that it's just business. I'm doing my job and they're doing their job. And at the end of the day, we can go have dinner together and laugh about it. Now, I have in my career crossed the line before and regretted it and went directly to the law enforcement officer and told him I apologized. I have been, when I was a freshman in Lee County, I would say, the freshman lawyer, I won a case against a veteran police officer. And after it was over, I was walking around the courtroom with my client, and he came walking up to me and grabbed my arm and spun me around and said, "Don't you ever question my integrity like that again. You're just like your daddy." And I said, "Thank you, sir." And I walked out. That guy's retired now. But anyway,
you can't handle the truth.
It's just business. And if you take it personal, then you got your own problems. So I don't take it personal. They don't take it personal. I'm very good friends with a lot of them. So that's a good question. It's a fine line. And there's always that percentage of bad apples. But that's with anything. I mean, there's percentage of bad apples in the practice of law. So it just happens.
And in journalism. There's like a 50% bad apple rate in journalism, and I would say as far as The Rant is concerned,
it's 33%.
That's right. I'm sorry, 33%. There's a 66% bad apple rate in journalism, and Billy Liggett and Jonathan Owens are the bad apples, and here I am trying to stick my thumb in the hole in the dam to stop the bad appleism from overflowing. What do you think about that, Billy?
I don't know. That's a lot to process.
That actually...
You lost me a sick my thumb in the hole.
Well, I think I found you there. That actually, though, brings me to the last thing I wanted to ask Chaz about, is you've been in the news recently, both in The Rant and in other publications, over Project Safe Neighborhoods, and your opposition... Your quote unquote opposition to the program, and I just, you know, I want to give you a chance to kind of say out loud for anybody who might listen to this what your opposition was about, whether it truly is opposition, et cetera, as you put Georgie on the ground.
Lord, Project Safe Neighborhoods. The U.S. Attorney, District Attorney's Office, Sanford Police Department, FBI, DEA, City Council, County Commissioners, Lee County Sheriff's Office, all instituted that program back in 2014. The way it was presented in 2014 was, we're going to call in this group of high-risk individuals that are on probation for violent crimes and or crimes involving firearms. And we're going to tell them, look, you know, you're going to prison. You're going to federal prison. We're going to indict you federally and send you to prison for a very long time if you don't straighten up. And if you want to straighten up, we are going to have the community resources available to you for education, housing, job opportunities, intervention, substance abuse, reentry, all of those things that come with helping people in that particular situation. And if you want to use them, they'll be there for you. So the assistant U.S. attorney, Rob Lang, you know, calls these guys and gals in. It's mostly guys, I think. I think it might be all guys. And, you know, gives them this in-your-face speech and says, there's a couple tables out in the hallway, you know, to go out there and better yourself if you want to. And I wasn't there, and I don't know what tables were there and what tables weren't. But after that, zip. Nothing. No community resources, no educational opportunities.
Speak for a second about what a community resource might look like. You don't have to be comprehensive, just give an example or two.
Community resources could be just like a partnership with CCCC or a partnership with local businesses.
To get people training or jobs,
yep.
Et cetera.
Yep, absolutely. You know, reentry programs. I mean, when people get out of prison and they do their 9 months post-release, you know, they've been there for a while. They don't know how to reenter society, and they need some help. But I'm long-winded with this because I'm passionate about it. But that was the way it happened in 2014. There was only two call-in meetings in 2014. That was it. And then all of a sudden, about 2 or 3 months ago, we get this email about reinstating the program. So I'm thinking, well, where in the hell have these community resources been for the last six years? Because all I've seen in my job is people getting locked up in federal prison for most of their young adult life. And I didn't see anybody get any help, any community resources. So I just want to be clear about one thing. I'm not against Project Safe Neighborhoods as it was presented the other night. I'm against the way it was done in 2014 all the way up until now, which simply locked people up. And I'm also against the way people were selected. I mean, I would be standing in court, and we'd do a plea, and the guy would get probation, and no one would say anything. And the judge would be like, do you want this guy to be in Project Safe Neighborhoods? And the DA would be like, yeah, that's a good idea, Project Safe Neighborhoods. So the selection process was a little bit, you know, out of the ordinary as well. And I'm not beating anybody up over this. We have a great DA's office. The assistant DA that runs the Project Safe Neighborhoods program is a friend of mine. He does a really good job. He's smart. He's capable. He's caring. He's got a big heart. He's not a bad man out to get people. But I just think if we're really going to do this again, we need to do it the right way, and we need to make sure that we have a plan in place to help rehabilitate these people so that they don't go back to the same life that they were leading before.
So we, Gordon, we've covered Chaz's career, his city council work. Is there something else you had?
So Billy. had a column in the November edition of the Rant Monthly regarding how hard it was to say goodbye to your dishwasher.
Yeah, yeah, I read it after it printed, and I said, "What? What was I thinking there?"
I mean, that
what
seems
did I eat before that?
Kind of like standard small town daily column fodder, and no, I get it. I'm not mad about it.
You know, before we get into dishwasher talk, that was my column when I was a newspaper editor. Was I just wrote about my life, and you put yourself out there, and you write about things like how you get attached to inanimate objects like a dishwasher, and some people either agree with you, but most people think you're just kind of weird. And so I read that column, and I thought afterward that was kind of weird. But what the column was about was, I get attached to inanimate objects like a van that I drove all of my children in. And if I'm going to sell that van, there's a part of me that says, well, that van was a very important part of my life because it saw me through these very important moments in my life. And if I ever have to sell my house, I'm going to feel the same way. That house has so many memories in it.
I mean, selling a house is like different, though. You're
okay, well,
uprooting
this,
your
so this dishwasher has been there for the last 12 years for us. And maybe for the last 3 years of it, you had to practically wash every dish before you put in the dishwasher.
Hold on. No, that's the thing. Like, you wrote that in the column.
Yeah.
And I think this might have been a conflict that Jordan and I had.
Mm-hmm. What our dishwasher was,
wrong.
It was just,
but I was
like, I viewed
taught.
The dishwasher that we had as it practically just kind of sanitized the dishes that we already washed.
Well,
therefore, it's wasting a lot of water and energy.
I was always taught that if you put a bunch of crust and food-caked dishes
exactly.
into your dishwasher,
it's going to come out crust and food-caked, right?
No, sure. no, but that's gonna overload the dishwasher. And,
I don't know about that.
No,
Jordan, come on.
Jordan is...
All right, so with our old dishwasher, if you were to just put a dish,
you have to spray off your dishes anyway before
right.
you put them in the dishwasher.
Right, the old one, yes. So with our old dishwasher,
and your
with our old dishwasher,
and your new dishwasher, you'll
well,
you don't.
I'm gonna get to that. I'm gonna get to that. So say, and Chaz, you can chime in anytime here. So with the old dishwasher. If you were to take a caked on lasagna.
Chime in anytime,
dishwasher.
If you were to take an old caked on lasagna dish, baking dish, and put it in my old dishwasher and started it, it would come out with an equal amount of caked on lasagna still on it. So it was a terrible.
That's not how you clean a caked on lasagna dish.
But Gordon, listen, we got a new one. We got a.
Yeah, I know.
Frigidaire.
But a new dishwasher.
We got a Frigidaire or something or other. So if you were to take that same caked on lasagna dish and put it in my new dishwasher and don't touch it,
it
and
comes
turn
out
it on,
with a full lasagna.
No.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
It comes out. Can I say? No, I can't say that word.
How you say?
It's. How you say? It comes out sparkling clean. It's the most amazing thing.
What brand is this thing?
I want one of these. I know, I'm telling you, but...
New dishwashers are...
As a young person...
Are incredible.
...who was like, look, there's half a burger, which that doesn't make sense. There was never half a burger left when I was a young person.
Our new dishwasher is so great that I'm really at the point thinking, what if I put a half a hamburger in there? Will it just disappear? It might,
but
because this dishwasher is that amazing.
That's the thing, though. If you leave a bunch of Skylab all over your plate and then put it in the dishwasher without rinsing it off,
right?
Over time, that's going to weigh on the integrity of your dishwasher's power.
Well, we haven't gotten to that point yet. The dishwasher is barely a month old now, but it's doing an incredible job.
It's like a car, though. Man, I got a new car. Chaz, you
so,
got a new car recently?
Okay.
Have you?
No.
But Gordon,
but when you get it, you're like, man, the power,
the torque,
whatever that means.
The windows that you don't have to manually roll down. No,
but then, you know, 5 years in, you're like, oh, man, the power and the torque, it's not there anymore.
Yeah. So with this new dishwasher, though, to be honest with you, I still am in the habit of washing my dishes before I put them in the dishwasher because I'm kind of just anal about that, and I will do it that way. My wife, however, will take the plate directly from the kid and just stick it directly in the dishwasher, and it kind of drives me crazy, but then she runs it, and it comes out clean, and I can't argue right now. And so if you're saying that we're revving the engine too much by doing that, then we haven't gotten to that point yet. But I don't know how dishwashers work, to be honest with you. I just put them in there, close it, press a button, and they come out clean.
Do you use those Tide Pod thingies?
That's, yeah. So
it's millennials with their Tide Pods.
It's the... This one we bought Tide Pods for, but we still had some old dishwasher liquid, and I squirted it in there, and Jennifer's like, you can't do that. It's a new dishwasher. I said, no, it's made for any dishwasher. And she said, oh, we got to read the instructions before you do that again. I don't want you ruining my new dishwasher. And so I never read the instructions afterwards, so I don't know. But, yeah, we use Tide Pods.
I mean, I think that's probably the best thing you can possibly do for any new appliance, whether it's...
Where does the plastic go? Do you ever wonder that?
Oh. I think it dissolves.
Okay. Yeah.
Because you're actually not really supposed to have wet fingers when you clutch a Tide Pod because it makes the shut up. It makes the Tide Pod plastic dissolve.
When you clutch a Tide Pod.
Shut up. Okay.
I mean... when your dead bony hand reaches up through the earth and it needs to clutch something.
So the column is still relevant in that, yes, when I sell my house, it's going to be very difficult because that's the place where my wife told me we were going to have our first kid. And that's the place where, you know, I saw my daughter take her first steps. And that's the place where I lost my virginity. But still, I mean... And
inside the dishwasher?
Inside the dish. It all comes down to
the dishwasher. You climbed
in? Oh, let's talk about what you wrote about in your column. Gordon Anderson, who is now...
Ain't nobody.
...front man of a band that performs in front of people now.
Ort Patrol.
Ort Patrol. Chaz, I once told Gordon that he under... sells his music. I think Gordon's music is really good, and I know the last thing he wants to hear from me is, hey, I think I could hear that song on the radio, because the Gordon is like, ugh, if it's on the radio, it sucks. But honestly, his music is great, and I was really excited to hear that his band Ort Patrol actually performed at Eddie Fest this past month.
Well, and were you excited to hear that we performed?
That you're doing it, yes.
Or were you excited to hear... that we were going to perform, and that you did not come to the concert. Same question to you, Chaz.
I was in Charlotte at the game watching the Panthers get their ass kicked.
Okay, he has a good reason. What night was it?
It was not at night. It was Sunday afternoon. We played about 5 o'clock, and my Carolina Panther fan wife...
Good for you, Jordan.
...was there.
Oh, not good for you.
But I think she thinks that there's some kind of... Cosmic.
What's that song I like that you have?
The song.
What's that song?
The song.
It's really good.
Like
it should be on the radio.
It's called "Let's Stay Broken Up."
That's it. It's a y'all. It's a great song. Go check it out.
And
on
I like two of Gordon's.
Spotify,
I haven't partaken into some of the new Ort Patrol, but on his former Ort Patrol, or his earlier Ort Patrol album. There's two songs, Nos Rednas, which is Anderson spelled backwards.
Why do you have to give away my secrets, Billy?
And Soul Force One. Those two songs are...
Soul Tech One.
Shit.
Stay broken up. I ain't mad. Also, though, I like Soul Force.
You should have called it Soul Force.
The song Soltech 1 is about Soul City, which anybody interested in North Carolina history should look up. And it turns to find out that Sanford local Charles Hayes was recently in a documentary about the history of Soul City, North Carolina.
I can't believe I didn't know that.
I just like all the wah 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 wah.
But the lyrics are.
I gotta talk to Charles about that.
Charles told me, he was like, "I'm gonna be on TV about this documentary about Soul City." And
so
I was
shut
like,
up, Gordon, while we talk about your music. But Chaz, no, I think Gordon's very talented, and he wrote a column in the most recent rant about
that is like two rants ago.
Oh, what'd you write about this time?
Just like how many people are clicking our website.
Oh, nobody cares about that.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
But no, it's good stuff. He underestimates his... You undersell your music, I think.
Yes, undersell, because...
Because he definitely does not underestimate anything about his music.
That's right.
So one time...
My music is rad. You know what, though? I'm turning 40 and like...
He undersells
back
it.
Back when we were doing the radio show, one of the shows we said we're going to play some of Gordon's new, I think it was Dr. Powerful music.
What a great name.
And Gordon was kind of nervous about it. And I had a prank on him that I was going to say, all right, here's the world premiere of the new Dr. Powerful song. And I played a Nickelback song. And I look over across the window and Gordon just kind of, his face just went white. He's like, why are you doing this to me?
That's hilarious.
I don't remember that.
Dr. Powerful, what a great name.
So you guys performed, and I know you're recording. Are you still recording? Is the album out yet?
We've been recording for years.
What's the status? Complicated.
Yeah, it's complicated. It's like a Facebook relationship.
But you do this. It's a passion project for you guys, right?
Yes, I expect no money. I expect no recognition. This is just something I do.
I'm pretty excited about something then, and I'll add to that, and it'll only be a minute, but my wife's encouraging me to write more, so I entered a fiction writing contest with 5,000 other people.
Oh, do that.
New York City Midnight. It's NYC Midnight.
It's very cool.
You told me about that at the Waffle House.
There were 4,000 entrants, and I made the first cut of 500 writers.
Yes, that needs to go on the... On the Rant website.
That's very cool.
So
congratulations.
I'm in the second round, and they give you a subject and a genre, and you have 24 hours to write a short story. And I just submitted my second round, so we'll see how it goes.
What, if you don't mind me asking, what is considered a short story? How many pages?
250 words. It's microfiction. Okay. It's like you have to...
God, 250 words is so...
It's tough, but they only give you 24 hours. And so I was so into this that I'm going to enter their short story competition, which is 2,500 words, and they give you 4 days to do that.
So 250 words, just give me that in pages if you're reading a regular book.
It's like quarter page.
I'm
like not even a page.
No, it's half a page.
Wow, you have to write a whole story in a half a page.
Write a story in half a page, and so give you an action. So in my first round, they gave you the action of opening a present, and you had to use a word. And so in the second round, they gave me washing windows, and the word was beauty. And so I wrote a story about a window washer who...
I would love to read these short stories.
So anyway,
short stories are good.
Yeah, so I made the second round, and I'm pretty happy about it. So
I think that having prompts, though, to do something,
it helps.
It helps.
Yeah.
I took a test that was 6 hours long. It was a specialist exam to be a criminal law specialist.
I was going to ask you, is your sperm count? How's your sperm count? 6 hours.
Not that kind of test. So I typed 30 essays.
Mr. Post, are you okay in there?
Well, I got two boys. Test.
No, tell us.
No,
about that,
yes,
Chaz.
We talked about our things.
Talking about writing, man. I took an exam,
like an aptitude.
An exam in October for my final leg of whether or not the North Carolina State Bar was going to certify me as a specialist in state criminal law, and the test was 6 hours long. The morning session's 3 hours, 200 multiple choice questions. The afternoon session was a 30 freaking short essay questions. And it was like a half a page. So it was grueling.
But
so.
They didn't give you a number of words?
No, not. It was way more than 250 words.
That's why, you know, you could tell it's from lawyers, that they're not like...
And there's no fluff. It's just like, this is the answer, period. This is why it's the answer, period. There's no, it's not fun.
Where'd you go to law school?
The one that doesn't exist anymore.
Charlotte?
That's correct.
Oh, okay. All right.
But I'll tell you a cool story about that real quick. I was in the very first class.
And the last.
Sorry. Yeah, I was the very first one. I was a pioneer. Started the school, man. But
so
now it's gone.
I only ask that because I know a few people are going to law school, and... I work at Campbell, and so Campbell has a law school too.
Good
and yeah, it's something. I mean, I've never met anybody that said law school was easy. Yeah.
God bless America.
My buddy Kellett Wade, who graduated from Campbell, I don't know, a year ago, somewhere. But he enlisted me to be his witness in his mock trial.
Yeah, you were the truck driver, weren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah. I had to play a truck driver. And he did such good research in developing the script that the quote-unquote judge, the law professor, said, was that guy an actual truck driver?
You look like a truck driver, Gordon.
But one, I'm flattered that I was able to deceive somebody who, you know, is a law professor. And then two, I'm worried, do I look like a truck driver? Which and then three, I'm worried, well, truck drivers do an important service. So I'm just crossed up with conflict.
Well, I asked Chaz about his law school, and I actually had a reason, and then I forgot it. But the reason is because you had to take the bar exam. And I know there's law schools today in North Carolina are struggling because I guess the bar exam got a lot more difficult because – the numbers are going way down, but explain to us real quick the bar exam.
One of the hardest things.
Yeah.
One of the hardest things I've ever, maybe the hardest thing I've ever done.
Chaz, before you go forward, I just want to mention that my understanding is that you learn all this stuff in law school, the bar exam then doesn't necessarily address any of it. It's not like something you learn in a class and then you take the class on the test. It's like you learn all this stuff about the principles of law and then you go take the bar exam, which is about what?
Substantive law. I mean, there's probably 16 topics or subjects and you have to know a little bit about everything to pass the bar exam. It's grueling, man. I mean, it's 2 days. It's 12 hours. 6 hours one day. All multiple choice, morning and afternoon, and then 6 hours the next day, all essays.
And you just did 3 years of school to get to that point. I can't imagine the pressure heading into a bar exam because you just did law school. You 3 years, and you got your Juris Doctorate, and then you have to take a test.
Yeah.
And if you fail that test... You're just kind of in limbo until you get to take it again.
Which I did, and I'm not scared to admit that. And anybody out there listening, if you fail, you know, try again. If you first don't succeed, try again.
Yeah, the numbers support that. You know, the percentage of people that pass it the first time is getting lower and lower. And
I nailed it the second time, but, yeah. I mean, it was a – because you can only take it 2 times a year. You take it in July or February. And so I – graduated in May, studied for 2 months, didn't pass it in July. You know, luckily the guy that I was working for gave me a job anyway, not as a lawyer, but as a law clerk. And I studied and I passed it in February and the rest is history. But it's definitely hard, man. It's crazy. And what's crazy about it is you have to know so much about all these different subjects and then you get out and you practice, you know, one, maybe two areas of law.
Yeah,
I mean, I've never even looked up a corporation's, answer. Since law school, since the
that
bar.
Reminds me, I've been having this issue with like international maritime law. And
you must be a sovereign citizen then. You ever looked that up?
We've written about it.
That's an interesting thing. These people think that the law does not apply to them, literally.
Well, that's what I'm going for here. I was in a boat in international waters, and I think that's a good time to end this podcast.